Before we begin our second season, we wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the current political moment. To start, we want to state for the record that we both strongly support Black Lives Matter. We also want to be clear that we both take it to be an uncontroversial fact that we live in a white supremacy. This isn't a controversial term in academia, in particular when it comes to critical race theory. It's used to refer to the way that our world is structured, namely that society is built to favor white people. One reason that people resist the term, I think, is that it sounds like we're saying that society is a compilation of white supremacists, as though secretly in our hearts, we actively wish for the dominance of the white race. And that's a very psychologistic way of looking at things and is just inaccurate. Acknowledging that we live in a white supremacy doesn't have anything to do with everyone secretly actively wishing for the oppression of non-whites. In fact, part of the problem is that to white people, the ease we have compared to other races is invisible to us. We don't even notice it, and it seems normal. And just a quick word about privilege. That's not to say that everyone who's white or a man has it easy or is automatically successful. This is a common misconception. We have positive associations with privilege, where often you'll hear people use it in a sentence like, oh, it's such a privilege to be able to do this thing that we're actively grateful for. And so I think part of what trips people up about privilege is that it's not a thing we're registering. And that's part of the problem. What it means is because of your identity, you have had the fewest impediments. That's just a better way to think about it. And it's hard to register because what you don't see is how many more impediments everyone else has because of their gender or their race or their sexuality or their class or their disability or whatever. To begin to reckon with the fact that we live in a white supremacy, we have to be able to question what we see as normal, to question a lot of what we take for granted. That involves a lot of listening, a lot of reading, a lot of watching YouTube lectures and documentaries. We don't have one or two things to unlearn. We have to reorient our sense of the whole picture. That also means questioning which stories we tell and how we tell them. A lot of what we do on this podcast is about questioning the history of male-dominated stories, which mainly relegate women to secondary characters. In the last episode of our first season, we talked about Spike Lee's 1986 film, She's Gotta Have It, and our discussion included mention of the white gaze, which is just as important to keep in mind. Our Western canon has long been held up as significant in part, so the story goes, because it offers a timeless, universal insight into what being human means. The problem is, most of those stories are about white men, and that becomes a problem when we start to see whiteness and maleness as the essential humanity, because other stories seem less universally relevant. How often have you heard a man say, oh, that's a story about a woman, I wouldn't know how to relate to it? Meanwhile, I've never heard a woman say the same thing about a story featuring a male protagonist. What we need to do is question what we find easily relatable, who seems quote-unquote easily likable, and to stretch our imaginations beyond what we take for granted as universal and essential. Women and people of color need to be able to see themselves represented in narratives as protagonists. But just as importantly, white people need to see more narratives with non-white protagonists, and men need to see narratives about women and non-binary people.
Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark. That was truly terrible. So, we are discussing season one, episode of five of Fleabag.
Yeah, there's only one more left in season one.
Yeah.
Another full-packed episode.
It's true. And so many guests this season, which is exciting.
Yes, it is exciting.
All right, so shall we dive into what we want?
Yes, and I know that you prepared this time, so you should go ahead.
Amazing. Okay, so yeah, I think what I want is just to continue something I've mentioned before, which is to keep leaning into the slowness of the world now that we're in this pandemic for the foreseeable future. I have to say, I do keep registering it, but I was at dinner outside with a cousin last night and his family, and his wife is saying that she needs to kind of process the pandemic in like 3-month chunks. And that's, I think, also how I work, which is just like, you know, just sort of like the next block of time. I can imagine my life for the next block of time, and I can kind of see until like October, November. And then whatever the world looks like then, I'll be like, you know, kind of recalibrating. But it is something where I now have more deeply registered the fact that this is going to be going on until there's a vaccine or vaccines that in combination with whatever other measures will help us to get much more of a handle on this, if not eradicate it, although I think that that's a bit of an optimistic dream at the moment. Yeah, that truly, even though the vaccine science seems to be coming along nicely, the pragmatics of finalizing trials and getting approval and manufacturing and distributing and then all the politics of who gets what first and which countries are going to get it first and who within the countries is going to get it first. What I'm saying is, what I'm trying to do is prepare for a long road ahead of a lot of time on my own and just try to like lean into that and get what I can from it. And I have to say, I've been doing a lot more meditating lately and it is changing my life.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it truly is. And I meditate twice a day, usually the first time for about 20 minutes and then more like 5 minutes, and that's just right before bed. My sleep is so much better. My ability to be present in my life, so much better. And yeah, just my awareness about a lot of things has really shot up. And I want to just really kind of keep on that road. And then also just, you know, with things like the posture work that I have to do and also my dissertation, as we were talking about, just kind of really start to appreciate the small steps we do on a daily basis and how that leads to bigger results. I think I'm an impatient person by nature. Meditation is helping with that. Also getting better at noticing the small results that I do notice and really kind of registering that and congratulating myself for consistent hard work.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That like really resounds with me as well. And I just wanted to comment because when I first heard about COVID, the first person I heard it from was someone that said it will probably take a bunch of years and will go in and out. So I was really happy that that's how it was presented to me. And I was like, oh, so when folks were like, oh, this will be over by in 1 month. Like I that's not what I thought. So I didn't have that. Like the bun was like so disappointed. That's my housemate. When he got an email that they were going to be at least whatever it was at the time, 4 more months. Like he was devastated in a way because he was kind of like, okay, we'll be back in the office soon. So yeah, so I was really happy I had that long thing. And it's interesting, even for the long look, I'm now having a few meetings about my project for 2023. And the conversation is like, oh, we'll keep it just in case it's still social distanced. So it's interesting that that's even in the conversation, like the theater piece.
Holy shit.
So yeah, again, yeah. And it's because it's interesting. We are heading like, again, towards 21. And I don't actually think it's going to be that long, but I was like, it feels good to have a theater piece though, that is set up for it. So yeah, anyway, that's just an aside I wanted to comment on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the long look, the little bite-sized thing and the slowing down and also with the body work I've been doing, and I also meditate, I feel like much of my day is now in meditation and it really makes an enormous difference when I think back to like a year ago and yeah, how my life was and how I felt. So yay to yours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I want actually is, you know, I'm going to sort of borrow from yours because I was like, yeah, I want to lean into the slowness. Before we started recording, you talked about how you write you put a certain amount of short amount of time aside for writing your dissertation every day. And then you said you wanted to maybe put it higher. And I thought for me, ooh, interesting. I think I want to even, like today I said, okay, I'll edit for an hour and I edited for 4 because I enjoy it so much. So I guess now I was even like, maybe I actually will literally set an alarm and go, okay, edit for 20 minutes and then leave. If I do edit longer, but just to try to, even as I get healthier, to still stay smaller. And my actual, what I want for today is just, I actually would like my muscles that I'm releasing in my pelvic girdle to stop spasming because it's a real bummer. Yeah. So I really am happy for, like you were saying, all the continued daily work I've been doing to sort of now gel together and add to more good feelings. But I'm in the like storm before the calm of that happening with literally the most painful like core muscles going crazy right now. So yeah, I really want that to stop. And it will. Yeah. I know for sure it will. It's yeah, all the spasming that's been happening since I've been doing somatic movement, it's always on the road to it, yeah, getting less and sort of dropping out pretty quickly. So,
yay. Right, yeah. Well, fingers crossed.
Yes.
That it happens soon. But this too shall pass.
It too shall pass. And now we will go to Fleabag,
episode awesome.
5.
Alrighty, I got my notes here.
I have notes again too. It's funny how much I'm pleased by my notes. Already back in school, I think I said I wasn't a note taker. Like I could knit in class. Like once I heard it, I like knew it. And I wrote some things down, but I wasn't an actual note taker. But it's really, really useful.
Yeah.
So funny to say.
Especially since there's so many different moments. Like they're coherent as episodes, but they're really just like little bites of her life. So, you know, they go to like their mother's memorial lunch, but there's so many tiny different things that happen within that. Like it would be so easy to forget certain things. So what do you want to start with? I feel like I'm always jumping in.
Well, I sort of like what you said, I felt, cause it is this like really dense series of moments. My notes are essentially always like when a moment grabbed me. And actually, do you know what the first note I have, I do have even a question about what you may make of it. Cause I am curious. So the first moment when she's having the first scene where Fleabag is having the breast exam done. And that's so interesting and loaded too, cause her father had sent her and her sister every year to have breast exams because that is what their mother had at the end of her life. It seems like she died from that. So they have these scheduled and the doctor knows both of the sisters. So already that's weird. So it starts with like, oh, I saw your sister. So that's weird. And then Fleabag makes it weirder by kind of like flirting uncomfortably. Mm-hmm. And oh, you know what's so funny? I wrote, what did you make of this? And now I forgot what the actual question was. But my first note was just the evil boobs everywhere. Just again, like her uncomfortableness that turns into something so funny and then so cringeworthy. But in that first scene, yeah. Anyway, I guess I was a little bit unsure as to, what you make of that first scene.
I think, at this point, it's become pretty clear to us that as a character, she has don't want to try and sound like I'm diagnosing it, but she's got like a real obsession with or fixation on men's desire for her, right? And she can't, like, I don't know if we've seen this episode yet, but there's even a moment where like a dog is looking at her and she manages to sexualize it, right? Like she can't not sexualize almost every experience, even that, like, or the guy that she meets on the bus with the weird teeth, like she doesn't fancy him, but she needs him to fancy her. Like she needs to kind of always kind of make it sexual. And I think like, so there's partly that going on, but then also this is extra textual, but what makes it funny is that I think like those are awkward moments where like somebody's just like, because they're so asexual, when somebody's just like got their hand and they're giving you a breast exam. Like, I mean, I haven't had the experience that she has, but it's one of those moments where everyone's pretending it's not weird. And because I think especially for the patient, for the doctor, it's probably normalized because for him, like he says, like it's like literally a thing he does all day. And so it's probably actually at this point really not even weird for him or at all sexual. But for, you know, for patients, it's like we're not in these situations most of the time, so it does feel just a bit intimate. And it's sort of one of those moments where it's like, oh God, the horror of bringing that up to the explicit level in a conversation while that's happening. And the like cringeworthy British awkwardness of that, of the way she's just being very like forward and the way, I mean, he doesn't seem to get too uncomfortable, but I think like you can feel like the other audience members cringing, even though I can't like see anyone else. I know that it's a moment where we're all like, oh my God, like
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know what? It's funny, when I wrote the question, I didn't really even know exactly what I meant anymore, but the way you just explained it, I think that is what it is. So yeah, that does make sense with the uncomfort. Oh, and I just want to interject with just a really quick story. I actually had a job being the body for breast exams, and I did actually get special training to give feedback. And
is this part of your standardized patient?
Yes.
You want to just briefly explain what that is for the listeners?
They hire actors to both act, affect, and stuff for speaking interviews. And then in rare cases, it's physical exams. That is more of a rare thing. But they train
actors, they hire actors to like train doctors.
Train doctors. Sorry, yeah. I missed that crucial part of it. So yeah, I was part of a group of women that were trained, and they wanted different size breasts and different kinds of breasts. And I was the little ones. And we were trained in all these ways to give the feedback, like to know what they're supposed to do so we could actually tell them. And it was so weirdly intimate. And one time the other person didn't arrive. Normally there was two people doing it and you'd have half of the class. Like, and this one time the other person didn't arrive. And I genuinely am extraordinarily comfortable in those kinds of situations. So I was like, sure. So I literally had two lines of people on doing both breasts. Is this a really rare example? But I literally, and also I had been wearing, I was wearing a kilt, white socks and boots. I looked down, I was like, come on. Like it feels ridiculous. I feel like I'm in some strange German porn. Anyway, that was just an aside. Because it is weird. It's very weird. And often in that, folks were very nervous. So you get like heavy breathing, just like things that were just very unfortunate. Anyway, aside.
But yeah, I mean, it's because it's, you know, the contrast of the seriousness of it. Like, because the other thing is like, there was, I think the last episode or maybe the one before that, like they'd been sent on some sort of silent retreat for Mother's Day. Like, it's sort of adorable how the father keeps showing his love for them and their unity as a family, but like not by like being with them, but just like literally by sending them to do things. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that is a very parent thing. Like I'm going to make sure that my daughters have yearly breast exams because, you know, he obviously like cares so much, but it also is just such a kind of slightly like weird thing. Like it's like a weird kind of.
Yeah. And then it is awkward.
Of care.
Yeah. And then I guess with that flavor of Fleabag that you said, that she seems very compelled to have have that experience of that kind of flirtiness. That's how you make that scene. Yes. So it's sort of like, it always hits the ground running. It hit the ground running. And then actually it's funny. The second note I have was because I remember when she was jogging in the last one and I just commented because she looked so out of place and I was like, is she running for a man? Is she running from a man? And I was like, that was my first thought. And then now she's running again in sort of dressed up clothes and she's running to Claire. So that almost is like, again, like a comment on the whole thing. She's always in like fast motion, one thing to the other.
Yeah. Always running late.
Always running late.
Like so, me. Yeah. Yeah. And they're meeting in front of the house for their mother's memorial lunch. And I take it also that Claire hasn't really spoken to her since she left the retreat after Fleabag had confessed that Martin had kissed her on her birthday.
That's right.
Yes. So yeah, there's like this beautiful tension between them, but also just kind of like a Claire's very British, like, let's get on with it sort of attitude. And the fact that I know, like the note I have here is like when the stepmother answers the door, I don't know if the stepmother has a name, Olivia Colman's character, the stepmother answers the door, it says like, I hope you don't mind if I join you, my Pilates fell through, which is just, it's so perfect. Like that one line tells us like five different things about that character. And it's so beautiful. Like, I don't have anything better to do, so I'm going to come to your
thing,
like memorial lunch, which is actually quite a sentimental thing, but I'm going to treat it like, oh, it's just any other activity I could tag along to. And then she sort of gushes over the flowers and then says, why don't we just leave them out here? Like, it's just so fucking perfect. Like it just every, like it's such a, like that one act, right? Like it's like one line and then she goes and she puts the flowers down on the porch and then they go in. It's like so fast, it's so brief,
tight,
it's so succinct.
Perfect.
And it just communicates exactly how that stepmother feels about being part of that family.
Yeah. And actually I had that note as well. And then just one line of Claire's right before when she said, don't provoke her when they're getting ready to go in. Like right. She's some kind of a cat, you know, like, but it's true. Cause you know that. And then you see Fleabag literally take that as a dare also, yes, which is funny.
Yes, exactly. Which Claire should know better. But
I know. Oh, and then another line right after that's shortly afterwards that also in that same succinct way sums up that we'll just call her Sexhibition because I don't know her name either, Olivia Colman. When she said, talking about the cat, remember they took the tree down and she said, well, offensive. I've never heard anyone say that, like just that is the lead about a cat. So I just thought that was such a funny, perfect line too. Not that she cares about the cat, it's just offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I also like the way that Fleabag is just... she really enjoys the stepmother's awkwardness and like awkward audacity is kind of like almost how I'd put it. Cause it's like, she's being really ballsy, but it's also very awkward. Cause you can kind of tell, and this, we actually like, you know, I'm getting this also because we see, I think maybe in the next season, more flashbacks to the stepmother from before she was with their father. She's obviously a very awkward person. She doesn't really know how to be around people, but she sort of, there's a kind of flamboyance that kind of masks that because she's obviously a like very deeply insecure person as well. Mm-hmm. And so there's something, I think Fleabag sees that and like, there's something extremely like, she kind of revels in it, you know, like she just enjoys watching her just be awful. And then like, and then provoking her even on top of that.
It's true. And I guess also a woman who would be drawn to that fellow, like the dad who doesn't really speak. So you could just imagine their whole life is literally just her talking about herself. Like that's what they do. And then she goes off to paint and he shuffles around in the kitchen is what sort of what I picture.
Mm-hmm. And then, oh my God, just his obvious, like he's, this is such a kind of, I think British male trope, especially like, or the Britishness tends to amplify certain things about masculinity or traditional masculinity, which is like an inability to express oneself. But like, obviously the father has very deep feelings. And so the way that comes out sometimes is just so funny to me because I think he sort of looks at them at a certain point and he says, you are my daughters. And Claire and Fleabag kind of look at each other and they're like, yes. But like, you know, like this, what's the subtext of that? The subtext is like, it's so meaningful to me that you're here and that we're like having a lunch together and that you're still with me, even though your mother is not. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff you can kind of read into that. I mean, it'd be nice if he could say it maybe a bit more elegantly, but that's how it comes out. You're my, like in these weird sort of like factual half sentences. Like it's very, I find that very endearing. And also just like, I just love that character of the father. Like it's so, it manages to capture something so heartwarming, but also something so, so absurd about a certain kind of old fashioned masculinity.
Totally. And then I think it is actually very true of a, like so many people can't express themselves. So the action of seeing someone try, I think is an interesting nugget.
Yeah.
And
he is trying. That's what's so sweet about it. But he's just not quite hitting the note that you can tell he wants to hit. He doesn't, his feelings and his like ability don't line up.
Mm-hmm. And then another note that I have that I thought was really lovely, because it's really the first time I think you see it at all, but that in the kitchen, when him and Fleabag do have that connection moment when they eat the food off the ground, because that was lovely to see, because up until then, you really didn't know at all if there was any of that. And then too, they kind of have a moment against the stepmom, like together, which I think is...
Yeah, because there's, what was interesting to me is that like Fleabag just kind of does her normal Fleabag thing. Like she pops it in her mouth and she's like, 5 second rule. And he's like, I've never believed in that. And then he grabs one and pops it in his mouth in this very playful way that you don't, he's usually very stiff and awkward. And they both sort of laugh. Yeah. And then the stepmother comes in and obviously is trying to
be the boss of it, because she's like,
be
what
the
are
boss
the rules?
Or kind of yeah. like reestablish her status, and she kind of can't because they've had like a real moment without her, and she can't handle not being included in everything. Yeah, and then she just like, there's another episode later, and I'll mention it when we come to it, but I don't want to give it away yet. But there's another moment later where she does something sort of similar, like she pops her head in and she can't handle not being part of that dynamic, because she, I think, wants to authentically be part of it so much, but she has just no idea how to do it. And so then ends up saying something totally, totally immature and awkward, and that just sort of, because Fleabag says, oh, you know, it's an old family game. And she's like, oh, what are the rules? Like,
yeah.
What? Like, no.
That's the only way she knows how to interact with something is like rules and how she can like, yeah.
Exactly.
Be the boss of it.
So can we stay on the stepmom for a minute and just talk sure. about how personal revelations at their lunch about her sexuality and their father's sexuality, and how she's also sort of like drooling over the hot guy who's there yeah. with Fleabag? There's so much going on there, but I want to hear your thoughts first before I...
I was so, the first time I watched it, and Olivia Colman's character, I just loved her so much. I've never seen anyone like that. And then, you know, she looks like she's all those things you just said, like awkward and nervous. It's such a rich character. And then she's like so mean, and she seems like she does enjoy the meanness so well. Like, it's just a very, very, yeah. Well, Olivia Colman playing a character like that. So it's super rich. Actually, ask the question again. I had some answers and I got muddled in too many of them.
Like, what were some of your thoughts about her intense personal sexual revelations and her drooling over Fleabag's date
as well? I love, as a subject, just a woman that's that sexual. And then it's so amazing. It's like magnificent how inappropriate everything is, like from the beginning to the end. And then also the self-centeredness, like it's such a masterpiece. Like, she was like, I think all women should see my body age and know what it's like, you know. But like, so it's again that steps into the absurdity, but you're really by it, because you do feel like all she thinks about is herself, and then she tells her husband to think about her. Do you know what I mean? So she's just generating the whole thing.
Because on the one hand, it feels like a really important thing that, 'cause we do desexualize older people in general, and especially older women. Mm-hmm. And I think it is like kind of like, it's an important topic to resist that, and, you know, to talk about sex more openly in general. But it is just the like wrongest context and the wrongest way in which to try and have that conversation.
Yes. And I think that's that Phoebe Waller-Bridge magic, because it's that cringy, awkward, awful, and then it's just so indescribably funny.
And the word sexhibition, like, it's just so perfect.
So perfect.
So perfect.
Yeah, because that's exactly what it is. It's like it's a sexhibition of her, which is exactly what she says it is proudly. But that is so deeply funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there is something just glorious about that it's her. That about her dad's, like the sculpture of her dad's penis that she wants to talk about, and with the boyfriend, how she's so sexual. But it's interesting with Fleabag's date, when he goes to look like he kisses her on the mouth, I guess that's her awkwardness again. Instead of kissing him back, like was what I kind of expected. She was so awkward. She was trying to get away
from
it.
You're right.
So that's interesting. That's where I think Olivia Colman did just really cool, interesting acting, where she chose the insecurity over the expected.
Yeah, and over the kind of like, I don't know, whatever the compliment might be, that he was like giving her that kind of attention. Yeah, that she actually had no idea what to do with that kind of attention.
She couldn't,
despite the fact that she spent an hour at lunch telling him how fucking sexual she is. Which, by the way, I'm also now realizing in retrospect, because at the beginning of that lunch, Claire snuck that statue back in to kind of bring it back. And it's right after, like, Olivia Colman finishes that character's like speech about how important it is to be sexual, and like says something to Claire, and Claire just looks so fucking uncomfortable, and she says, excuse me a minute, and goes upstairs and pretends to be sick and comes back downstairs and is like, you know, I have to go, I have a bad stomach, and then has come out and clearly stolen the statue again. Like obviously it's so interesting to me. Like, the fact that Claire is sometimes like a little bit like Fleabag, or like has that kind of devilishness, but it's just so much more repressed than Fleabag.
Yeah. And actually that was one of my notes, because I was like, whoa, Claire, at this episode is like guns a-blazin', because this jumps ahead a little bit, but near the end she said, I'm leaving Martin, I'm giving you the money for the cafe, I'm going to that job. And then she stole the statue back, and then she let the expensive cat out. Like, she goes bad, like she goes like double barrel badass.
That's Fleabag. Fleabag lets the cat out. In the washroom? Yeah, the cat comes in while she's smoking, I think, and or the cat comes in at some point while she's in the washroom, I think, having a flashback to her friend. And we realize we get a little bit more backstory there, where Boo and she had co-owned the restaurant. Despite the fact that the cafe is struggling, part of the reason she's hanging on to it is because it's like the only thing she has left of her friend, right? And at that moment, the cat comes in, she lets the cat out.
I got so into the Boo scene because I made a note about that. Actually, yeah. I might have been writing the note when I missed the cat moment. But because that Boo scene, she literally said, we did this, never let it go. Like, so literally when I heard that, you're like, oh, that's why she's sitting there. So she's kind of like traumatized and frozen. So she's not really doing much with the cafe, but then not, also doesn't seem like she's letting it go either. But that was just a clear, I guess I like when things like this organically soothe the like forced plot points. Do you know what I mean? This explains exactly why she's holding onto the cafe. So I guess that was an awkward way to say it, but just it's nice tight writing. So anyway, okay, so I can take the cat off of Claire's badass list, but compared to Claire, she really in the end almost like she like pulls a Fleabag. They're like badass. It's interesting. The family raised these badass girls that are devilish. But when they feel like it, they do really take action. They must have gotten that from their mom, I suppose, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, and that's funny because that line that Olivia Colman says to Fleabag at the end, your father and I often say that after you've had a couple, you're quite a bit like your mother. And that's when Fleabag pushes her. Like, it just, she gets tipped over the edge. Like, normally she can kind of contain it, but and then Olivia Colman smacks her. Oh my God, what a scene. Yeah. And like, we're just like, all of the stuff that's normally under the surface are coming out in the kind of conversation suddenly comes out very physically and very explicitly in that way. Oh God.
And it's interesting how with this kind of good writing, even though we've never seen like so much as a picture of the mom, I don't think, I feel like we know her. We're even like, we're saying what she must be like this, because the dad is so like the opposite, like so passive, he can barely speak.
Yeah.
So, and those two girls are like so particularly, like we said, can be so activated and take action so quickly. That must have been their mom.
Yeah. Yeah, I think and there was also a little bit of the description of their mom when they were talking about how she would take them as kids to the park and sort of make squirrel voices and like kind of be very playful. Like she obviously was a very playful woman. She was a very warm woman. She was a very confident woman. She was very, because I think that the ways that Fleabag is like their mother only give me some positive impression of what their mother must be like, that she must have been kind of very bold and sassy and like interesting as a person, because the father is so stiff and reserved. And during that conversation that they're having about the squirrels, that's when Olivia Colman says something else that's awkward, like, oh yes, my ex used to be like that, doing funny voices and things. Same. Like, she just wants so badly to not be on the outside of it. Like, she can't just let them honor this woman. She has to somehow like insert herself
in there.
Yeah.
And the examples they gave of the squirrel voices made her mom sound very cool. Like, so she treated the kids proper because she was saying like the fucking whatever. Like, so that also holds a lot of water. Not that I'm into swearing in front of kids, but if you're real with them, it happens. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of way that I always am around kids as well. And they really appreciate it. So I think she was a really cool mom. And also the way the sisters are, the love between the sisters also shows like a lot to me of who the mom was. It's just interesting. I've never thought that much about a character that is completely not present at all. Like, not even an image or flashbacks or anything, but I have such a strong idea of her.
I think that's about all I had, I have to say. But do you have any final thoughts?
I just had a few. They're very small, but this was a little earlier in the episode, but when they said, when it was about the braids, but when she said Claire tries new things on her period, and then the one time, or when she's like upset, and then just that blue, like kind of like morph suit she just walked into the kitchen in. It's I kind of like that Claire's missteps are very broad as well. I think that that also sort of shows again with the mom must have been someone that did stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And also even the thing, remember that line from another episode that I liked so much because they were like mom's farts. Was it squeaky door or skeptical
or grumpy duck or something?
And so if they would have had that those names for their mom's farts, she must have said that. She must have said, "Oh, is that suspicious duck?"
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So all those things, like she was one cool mom. Definitely. And probably too, even with a husband like that, she would have been the same thing, like the center of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
A different one.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But much more naturally a center of the show, I think, rather than having to grab it all the time, she would have just been much more graceful with it.
And it's interesting after just chatting more about the Olivia Colman character, I really think the stepmom, I really think that it's an interesting choice for a woman that is in lots of ways, like with the sexhibition and stuff, kind of like, I mean, I know it's seeped in insecurity, but sort of bold. Mm-hmm. And then she puts her insecurity into the character, like first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. And I think that that's a bold choice. Like most people don't do that. And then it made it so dynamic.
You mean Olivia Colman's choice to do that?
Yeah, her acting choice. Like even that example of that she didn't kiss the guy in the mouth, because I think it's a more obvious thing to have her just kiss him back.
Yeah.
But that insecurity makes it more interesting and more alive. Oh, then also I just had a comment that after the dad, and actually you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, I believe the dad saw the slap. Is that correct? And
he saw the immediate aftermath. Like he saw that she looked stunned and he'd probably heard the noise, but I don't think he saw the actual slap. I don't know though. I'd have to go back and take a look.
Fair enough. But I felt like there was definitely this palpable, like, so Fleabag's actually got a red hand mark on her face.
Yeah,
but again,
they're
not very obvious. Like they don't see stuff in that family necessarily. But so this moment, and I thought, because I thought he was coming down the hall and I thought he would have had to have at least known something was up. And then it's another one of those comments of that stiff British masculinity. He just said, "Oh, party in the hall."
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so indescribably funny the extents that people will go to pretend nothing's happening when so much stuff's happening. And then right after that, Olivia Colman too was like, "Well, what a lovely event," or something.
Yeah.
When they're leaving.
Yeah.
So,
which is just so, like, I have to say, I have a friend, my friend Anthony, who's Italian, who comes from, like, he's a Canadian Italian family. He talks about just how, like, how direct and expressive they are with each other, and not necessarily, like, not in angry ways, but just that, like, the feet, because he said something like that he'd asked his sister something that I was a very kind of personal question, and I was like, "Whoa, like, do you think she's gonna take that the wrong way?" And he's like, "Oh no, that's not the kind of relationship my family has. Like, if she wants me to fuck off, she'll just tell me to fuck off, or if she, you know, has an opinion, she'll just tell me." But I was like, "Oh, sorry, yeah, I'm a wasp. Like, I'm projecting, like, the passive aggression that I learned in my upbringing onto you." And it's like, yeah, if you're not used to the passive aggression, then you won't read it, because I think a lot of people who are familiar with passive aggression read directness as like really, really aggressive,
or hostile,
instead of just
even,
like or hostile, instead of just sort of neutral, or like
a question. Well, I find because I find that sometimes I'm like trying to start a conversation or find out, like, it's sort of like you're like, you want to find out about someone, you're curious. And then they're like, they take it like an interrogation because they're not used to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So it's difficult, but
it is interesting to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did just have one more note. We had talked about the scene a little bit, but it's the flashback with Boo that they always are. They're so short, but they're so powerful.
Yeah.
And I also thought that it was interesting the moment that they chose, because a moment where Fleabag hated herself, that's a really generous and rare thing too for her friend to be like, "Okay, come on, take it out on me." So it's just this really sweet, so you see also, like, she had a real friend there, like someone that would let her take out her own anger on herself and make, I mean, it was like a joke, do you know what I mean, but it was still a really sweet thing. So I feel like all so much is in there.
And I
think you probably only see Boo in the whole thing, like, for say 10 minutes, do you know what I mean? Because it's so short, but it's so powerful. All those are like almost like emblazoned in my mind. Their friendship. So
exactly.
It's a very cool thing.
Yeah. Like 10 minutes in season one, I think, like, like with the, exactly.
All together. I mean, So Fleabag, we like it.
I can't, we do. And I can't wait for the culmination of season one.
Oh, yes.
Which we're going to get to sometime soon. Yeah. So,
yeah, so
I think now that
we've said it,
we've got to get it.